Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. In this November's elections, three ballot proposals related to legislative districting, elections, and voting access went down to defeat, all by about the same significant margin, around 56 to 44 or thereabouts. And joining me today is the executive director of one of the leading reform groups that backed all three of these proposals, Susan Lerner from Common Cause New York. Ms. Lerner, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be here, Grant.
Well, we're delighted to have you, and thanks for making the time. So for my first question, what I'd like to do is separate out proposal number one from proposals three and four, because I think number one was more complicated, and it also seemed to arguably contain some items that went in different directions. And so let's just start at the beginning. Even though the vote has happened, briefly, what would proposal one have done?
Proposal one would have simplified and improved our redistricting process. We are experiencing the redistricting process right now. The census was finished in 2020. The results weren't available until September. The new redistricting commission has been holding hearings around the state, and there are ambiguities and incorrect information and a bad timetable that is in our current redistricting provision in the Constitution that means that the new redistricting maps, which tell people where the boundary lines are for Congress, for districts, for the state Senate and state assembly, are very likely not going to be ready in time for candidates to get on the ballot for the right district for our June primary. Because when the Constitution was amended in 2014, we had a September primary. Now we have a June primary. Mm-hmm. And the data came late. So the timetable that is set in the Constitution, which means the legislature isn't able to change it, is totally out of whack, and it's going to be a big problem. And the provisions simplified a very complicated provision, stripped out ambiguous and unconstitutional information, and set one uniform, fair standard, not a shifting standard that changed based on political outcomes, to set the standard by which the maps had to be approved.
So it had also specific provisions about who gets counted for the purpose of this.
Right, right.
Tell us which groups of people now are treated in different
right.
ways.
So the Prop 1 would have amended the Constitution to require that all incarcerated people be reallocated to their place of last residence for redistricting purposes. Currently, state law provides that for the state legislature, the people who are incarcerated have to be reallocated. And it's called a ban on prison-based gerrymandering, because when you have a prison, often in a relatively low population area, you have several thousand people who are unable to vote there and who, frankly, don't receive services there. There actually are instances where prisoners have petitioned for assistance from the surrounding county government, and the county government has received court orders which say that the prisoners are not residents in that particular area. But it also has a significant impact on local redistricting. Because if you have a county with a relatively small number of people, and you have a prison that has 2,000 to 5,000 people in one particular area, then you're creating districts as if those incarcerated people were actually resident. And it's unfair to the residents in the rest of the county that this one district has padding of people who can't actually vote. And in fact, there's a famous instance in a county in, I believe, Idaho, where there was a district that was drawn that had 2,500 plus residents, but only two registered voters, the warden of the prison and his wife. So, and, you know, it has consequences also in town elections. So we took care of that by statute back in 2011, but with a statute, all we could do was to affect the state races. We couldn't affect Congress. So there are going to be two different population numbers now that are used for drawing the lines for the legislature and local lines, and a different set of lines for Congress. That's not a good idea. Also, a very important provision, our Constitution has language in it to guarantee that the districts are drawn on the full number of people who live in the district, irrespective of their status as a Native American, whether they're a citizen or not, something which the founding fathers of the country thought was a very important principle. But as you know, in the last several years, there was a lot of smoke, basically, about whether the census should fail to count people who are not citizens. That, thank goodness, did not take place. But our state constitution has ambiguous language. And what Prop 1 would have done would have been clarified to be sure that every time a map is drawn for districting purposes in New York, it will be on the full number of residents, and clarifying a provision in our state constitution that if the U.S. Census failed to properly count New York's population, the state would be empowered to do it itself. So a lot of positive things, but as you pointed out, a very complicated provision and one that was frankly unreadable on the ballot. And I think that is a major contributing factor.
Well, one other thing I wanted to ask you about that's in it, that at least my impression was when I read through it that was in it, was to strengthen the hand of the majority party in the legislature to overrule the map that the commission comes out with. And you're smiling at me. People can't see that on the radio. So you're obviously going to correct me on this. But what I thought I read was it went from a supermajority to a simple majority. Why? And that to me sounded like further gerrymandering. And since the legislature is likely to be Democrat for at least probably our lifetimes, Democratic gerrymandering, not the case.
There's no other place in our Constitution where we provide preference to any particular party. But the current constitutional provision was written with when the Republicans were in the Senate majority. They anticipated that they might not be in the majority in the future, and they tried to build into our Constitution the ability to put their thumb on the scale and be able to veto any maps they didn't like and hang up the entire process. So that's what I was talking about when I said about one uniform standard, no matter who is up or who is down. We don't memorialize minority veto anywhere in our laws, anywhere in our Constitution. If you go back to the founding fathers again, they felt very strongly that our Republican system of governance was a system for majority rule. And when they had the opportunity to build in minority vetoes in the state, in the U.S. Senate, they rejected it. So I find it anomalous that people are saying that somehow or other this is jiggering unfairly for an advantage for one party or the other, when all we're trying to do is set one uniform standard, irrespective of who's in control. And the measure that in Prop 1 strengthened the hand of the commission, because it made it easier in the state legislature to pass a map approved by the commission. That's what the 50% was for. If the commission got its act together and approved one map, and it went to the legislature, it didn't have to pass with a two-thirds majority. It could pass with a straight majority. So I think there was a lot of misimpression and a lot of, frankly, deliberate misinformation that was disseminated about the impact of this proposal. And because, as I said, you couldn't actually read it and understand what it said, it was easy for people to misrepresent what was in it.
I see what you're saying there about turning it around, looking at it from the other way. You're emphasizing limiting the minority veto as opposed to pushing something through. So I get the distinction you're making. So
not switching based on who's up today and who's down tomorrow. The rule should apply to everybody uniformly, and it requires 60% of the commission. And if the commission doesn't agree. It would have required a 60% vote, a supermajority vote of the state legislature. So the onus is placed and all of these changes on the commission to do a better job, to be uniform, and to send maps forward, a map forward to the legislature, which is what everybody wants.
I see. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Susan Lerner, the executive director of Common Cause New York. Now, you said that the fact that this was complicated and difficult to read, and I think I've just demonstrated that for you, was a contributing factor in its defeat. Why else did it lose by such a significant margin?
Well, I think all of the proposals lost because one very, very wealthy individual who it appears is hostile to improving our democracy funded a campaign of fear-mongering. And they were not, and the fans and proponents of democracy and strengthening and improving our democracy didn't have similar resources, didn't step forward. As a consequence, the voters didn't have the information they needed to make an informed decision about what was really in these proposals.
I want to come back to that a little bit later, but let me just stick with the question of redistricting itself here for a minute. So then would I be right to conclude that where this leaves redistricting then at this point is that this new system that we currently have that we're going through, and apparently it's not going very well so far because the commission could not come to a consensus on a map, so they issued two maps, that's going to be it for a while, that's it's probably going to be hard to change this then now that we've had this proposal and it's been defeated. Is that true, do you think?
Yeah, there's nothing that can be done now to change the time frame in the Constitution. We're at the mercy of the commission. When Prop 1 was before the voters during the campaign, the chair of the commission said, oh, well, we don't need it because we'll voluntarily deliver the map or maps on the time frame that's set up in Prop 1. In the last hearing that I listened to, he said, well, we'll deliver the maps either by January 1, which was what was suggested, or by January 15th. So already we're hearing that they are not going to voluntarily provide the information that's needed for the maps to be finalized in time for candidates to start circulating petitions in late February, early March, and for voters to know who is actually running in their district and which district they're in.
So what's the commission's problem? Is it incompetence? Is it that it's still being driven by opposing party interests? What's going on?
So the problem is one that we objected to when the 2014 amendment came up, and that is that and we're seeing this across the country, by the way, in other places that have adopted a bipartisan instead of a nonpartisan commission. Right now, it's a sad fact that our political atmosphere is highly polarized. And when you set up a commission or any entity, and we see this problem in our Board of Elections as well, mm-hmm. where you have an equal number of Democrats and an equal number of Republicans, they are tending to split and to logjam. And you have to have an odd number. You have to have some unaffiliated people involved because remember, Grant, the second largest registration in our state are people who refuse to register for any political party. Mm. So we have more unaffiliated voters than we have Republicans. So you want to talk about protecting the minority. We are definitely protecting a minority when we are insisting that only Democrats and Republicans can be involved in redistricting or administering our elections. And we are cutting out millions of voters who are trying to get the parties to do a better job by voting with their feet.
And those independents must really want to be independents because they give up their right to vote in a primary by doing that.
That's right.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Susan Lerner. She's the executive director of Common Cause New York, and we've been discussing three of the ballot proposals which were defeated in this November's election. So let me ask you one more question, Susan, about the districting process, and that's just Given then where we are now, what kinds of legislative maps for New York, for Congress, would you expect to result from this process?
I have absolutely no idea. The two maps that were proposed, the initial maps, are completely different. And in testifying before the commission earlier this week, it's clear to me that they don't have a unified vision at all. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the other two proposals, 3 and 4. We did the hard one. You're the easy ones. So they're more clearly in the same vein. So just tell us briefly what these two proposals would have done.
Very straightforward. Proposition 3 would have eliminated the administrative barriers to voter registration that we see in our state. It would have eliminated the 10-day registration deadline from our state constitution, giving the legislature flexibility to set up deadlines that are closer to election day or on election day. Proposition 4 would have made the ability for any New York eligible voter to get an absentee ballot without having to satisfy a justification written into our constitution decades ago, and that you would be able to vote absentee just at your own discretion, which frankly, is pretty much the system we have had during the pandemic. And right. New York voters have taken tremendous advantage, including Onondaga voters. 6,500 people voted absentee in the November election, a relatively high percentage for an off-year election. People like absentee voting. So the amount of misinformation that $3 million plus dollars can provide and fool the voters is apparently limitless.
So you said this was largely one individual's money. And just for our listeners, who was that individual?
So it is billionaire Ron Lauder, who is the heir to the Estee Lauder fortune, who lives in New York City.
And what got him so worked up over these?
He's obviously a very conservative person who does not believe that every eligible voter should be able to vote.
Okay. Now, and again, why do you think these went down? It was because of that information campaign primarily?
Yeah, absolutely. The voters heard only fear-mongering, misinformation, trying to make people frightened about how this would lead to voter fraud. It was very much the big lie and voter suppression conspiracies that we've seen around the country coming to New York at the very last minute of the election campaign with a huge amount of money behind it. And frankly, the voters simply did not have an opportunity to have correct information provided to them. Most voters don't know that 34 states and the District of Columbia already have no excuse absentee. Texas voters have no excuse absentee. Kansas voters, many red states have no excuse absentee. But New York's voters don't have that same access to the ballot because one wealthy individual is frightened of having all voters vote.
So I assume then, or let me check this with you, that in, similarly to where we were with redistricting, that this will make it harder to expand access to the ballot in these ways going forward. I mean, because I would assume that those that are against it can now say, look, you know, we put this proposal before the people of the state of New York. They voted it down decisively. We don't need to keep talking about it.
Well, I think we are going to end up talking about it when people want to get an absentee ballot and they find they can't. Hmm. All of the people who have taken advantage of the ability to get an absentee ballot, to vote at your kitchen table, to take the time you want to figure out what's on the ballot and fill it out and mail it back, are not going to be able to do that now. And I think we're going to have some pretty angry voters. So I do think we are going to be continuing the conversation about how to remove barriers to voter registration, because frankly, when we get phone calls from people on election, around the election, particularly presidential elections, it's not unusual to have numerous individuals who call and say things like, the election's in a week, I moved here from another state, I was really busy, I forgot to register, what do I do? And our answer is nothing. There's nothing that you can do. You can't vote. You are now disenfranchised. We know people have busy lives, and a 25-day registration deadline is counterintuitive. It is tied to nothing. So it slips by people and it disenfranchises them. That's totally unfair. At a minimum, by statute, we should be changing the absentee deadline to the 10 days permitted in the state constitution.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Common Cause New York Executive Director, Susan Lerner. So I know, and I want to talk a little bit about the politics of this, but I know that your group is nonpartisan. You can't be partisan, but I do have a question about the party politics that surround these proposals, and it leads to kind of the thing that perplexes me that is behind almost all the questions I've been asking you, which is, you know, New York is a deeply blue state. I think it's fair to say that the general thinking is that when you expand the access to the ballot and you make it easier for people to vote and include more people in the counting and all the other things that these proposals are doing, that that's going to help Democrats. And we're in a deeply blue state. So why could these possibly have failed? Even with that billionaire's disinformation, it's like, you know, preaching to the choir. I don't understand.
The people, I can't tell you the number of people who after the fact have said, I had conversations with family and friends and they told me I couldn't figure out what these meant. Hmm. I couldn't make my own determination. I couldn't fathom what they were actually trying to do, because they were written to a college or graduate school level, which is absolutely ridiculous. And there will always be people who aren't paying attention until they get into the voting booth. And if the proposals that are on the ballot aren't written in plain English, they are not going to be comprehensible. And all of these proposals had a relatively high percentage, particularly in New York City, of people who did not vote for them. And we keep hearing over and over again, it's because I didn't know what they were going to do. I couldn't read it. I read it and I couldn't understand it, so I didn't vote for it, because I don't want to vote for something I don't understand. So that was a major contributing factor. And for people who were paying attention and they heard the fear-mongering and they heard the misrepresentations about voter fraud, not a problem that we have in any of those 34 states that have no-fault absentee, they went to the language of the ballot and they were like, oh, I can't read this. So I guess what I heard on TV is probably right. They did not have the information.
Okay. And so let me also run a pet theory on this by you, see what you think of it. In addition to what you've said, I also wonder whether, given the fact that politics in this country has become so toxic to so many people, and that Albany has never really had a very good a reputation among the citizens of New York. I mean, they always look sort of askance at that. And you factor in that these things were hard to understand. I'm wondering if also a lot of voters turned this over and looked at this and said, I don't really understand this. It's about Albany. It's about the legislative process. I'm just voting no. I'm against it.
No, I don't think that that's
You don't think that's it. Okay.
No, I think that actually people are inclined to vote yes, unless there is a significant push to try and convince them otherwise. And I think in this instance, and let's remember, it's not just one party that opposed this. There are anti-democracy forces throughout the country, and they came here to what everybody thinks is a blue state, but we know is not homogeneous and homogenous across the state, spent a huge amount of money, and the pro-democracy people were complacent and were not out there clarifying and explaining to people why it was very definitely to their benefit. But you have one-on-one conversations with voters, and really, it's a very limited number of people who don't like being able to get an absentee ballot.
Hmm. And was there complacency among all these groups?
Yes.
That they just figured this is going to pass, we don't need to worry about it?
as you said, everybody says this is a deep blue state. Mm. How could something so pro-democracy, people keep saying to me, common sense reforms, that everybody expects that they are common sense reforms, and they are. But $3 million of misinformation and fear-mongering will override even common sense.
Well, we've only got about a minute and a half, but I want to squeeze this one last question in. It's a little bit more philosophical, and I wanted to see what your thoughts were on it. If we think about civic participation, you could make the argument that you don't want to make it, or there are some downsides, let me put it that way, to making it too easy, because it takes away from the civic significance of the event. Like, you know, we're going to make voting a national holiday, and we're all going to vote on that day, and we're going to do it together, and it's, you know, we're going to have parades and all that kind of thing. Instead, you know, I'm just mailing it in. Do you think there's anything about that, or are those kind of arguments?
Have to walk 5 miles in the snow barefoot in order to be able to vote. It's not an argument that I buy. Number one, it is a right, not a privilege. And number two, do you know where there's huge voter turnout in our country? Puerto Rico. And do you know what they do in Puerto Rico? They consolidate all of their elections to one day that is a holiday, and they have bands and they have parties, and it's a great community celebration, and everybody comes out to vote. So the idea that you make it easier, frankly, is nonsensical. It is a right, not a privilege to vote.
I like the Puerto Rican model, and combining that with making it easy, that may be the key to do both. But anyway, this is obviously a story to be continued. That was Susan Lerner, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. It's been educational and it's been interesting. So thank you.
Grant, thank you for this very interesting and nuanced conversation.
You've been listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio. Assistant producer is Jacqueline Witwicky, and the program is edited by Mark Lefoner. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.